works his way into the starting lineup. Pretty backdoor pass. Beal with the bucket, and he drew the foul.
Bradley Beal, Russell Westbrook, and the Wizards win very easily last night over the Pacers. After the Pacers a few nights ago rolled the Hornets by 27, they get rolled last night by, you guessed it, 27. 142-115, Wizards move on. Russell Westbrook, another solid game, 18 points, 15 assists, 8 rebounds. And at one point this season, the Wizards' chances of making the playoffs were 0.6%. They started the year 3-12. They won 17 last 23 games. At one point, they were 17-32 and at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. And now they've gone all the way up to the number 8 seed. Russell Westbrook had a meeting, called his team in and said, listen, we're going to the playoffs, so get on board. And that's a leader. You know, some people question whether Westbrook's a leader or not, but Paul George said he's the best teammate he ever had. So it is interesting how Westbrook gets knocked by people, and some people said that's why Durant left. It's like, if Paul George, it's good enough for him, why wasn't it good enough for Kevin Durant? But we never fully ever heard Durant say, I didn't like Russell Westbrook. They're actually really good friends and buds and so forth and so on. But Westbrook has made his team better, and he led the league in assists as well. So it's not like he shoots it all the time, obviously. And last night, his team, behind himself and also Bradley Beal's play, rolled the Pacers 142-115. And so they move on. They shot 14-28 from three. Did the Wizards, and they're pretty excited to move on to the next round of the playoffs, where they'll take on the number one seed, the Philadelphia 76ers, who, by the way, are not the favorites to win out of the East. Of course, it's the Nets, despite being the two seed. And also, finalists have been announced for different awards for the NBA. Your MVP finalist, Nikola Jokic of the Nuggets, Joel Embiid, former Jayhawk with the 76ers, and of course, Steph Curry. Those are your three finalists for the MVP. It is interesting, if you're a Missouri Tiger fan, and I'm so sorry you are, but if you are a Missouri Tiger fan, you got a lot to celebrate. Michael Porter is a six-man finalist for six-man player of the year, former Missouri Tiger, didn't play very much in Mizzou because he's hurt. Quinn Snyder, who apparently is a better NBA coach than college coach when he was at Mizzou, he's up for coach of the year. Jazz, the number one seed in the West. And Jordan Clarkson is also up for six-man of the year, if I got that right. Actually, I think Porter's up for most improved, perhaps.
Yeah, because there's two Jazz players that are up for sixth man. It's weird. Like, it's Clarkson and then Ingles, and then I can't remember who the other one is. I don't think it's Porter, but I think he is on the improved one, Michael Porter.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up right now, actually. Most improved player, Michael Porter Jr., and Jeremy Grant of the Pistons, who wasn't great with the Thunder, and he really improved. And, of course, Julius Randle's going to win this easily for the New York Knicks. The NBA six-man, you mentioned two six-men are from the Jazz. I didn't know you got two six-men. But anyway, Jordan Clarkson and Joe Ingles, Derrick Rose, who's reinvented his career with the Knicks.
Yeah, that's the other one.
Coach of the Year candidates, Quinn Snyder of the Jazz, Tom Thibodeau of the Knicks, and Monty Williams of the Suns. I would go with Quinn Snyder of the Jazz would be my vote. Six-man, I have no idea. I haven't followed those guys very closely. Probably Jordan Clarkson with the Jazz.
Clarkson's probably the leader in that.
And then Randle win Most Improved Player. Defense Player of the Year, Gobert, Green, or Simmons. I mean, they're all outstanding. Yeah. I mean, that's splitting hairs. Rookie of the Year, I think LaMelo Ball will win it. Anthony Edwards and Tyrese Halliburton are the others. I don't know who deserves it more, to be honest with you. And then MVP, Curry, Embiid, and Jokic. And I would say Jokic probably should be the one that wins MVP, although it's hard to go against the other two. Have had unbelievable years. A little bit of me is hoping Embiid gets it, but because he missed first 2 years of the NBA, basically, and people are calling him a bust, and now he could be an MVP. Mm-hmm. That'd be pretty awesome. He is on the number one seed in the East, the best team in the East, and yet they're not picked to win the East, so. You know, go figure. So those are the award finalists for the NBA. But tonight there's another play-in game, and it is Steph Curry in action, as it's a win or a go-home situation, just like it was last night in Eastern Conference, as tonight it is the Warriors and the Grizzlies out at Golden State on their home floor. And I tell you, if the Warriors play like they did the other night against the Lakers, they will win this game. But who knows? Different game. Andrew Wiggins is going to have to play well again, I think, for them to win. Memphis is an up-and-coming team with Ja Morant, and Steph Curry, of course, is Steph Curry. So it is Warriors-Grizzlies tonight. Winner gets the Jazz in the first round of the Western Conference playoffs. NBA playoffs will start coming up tomorrow already. It'll be the Bucks and the Heat. The Bucks said that they wanted the Heat.
Well, congratulations. You get the Heat, and I don't feel good about the Bucks' chances, to be quite honest with you. Heat and Bucks, all the pressure on the Bucks, and that'll be game one tomorrow at 1 o'clock on ESPN. Game one, Clippers hosting the Mavericks. That's the 4-5 matchup in the West at 3:30 on ESPN tomorrow. Also tomorrow at 7 o'clock primetime, of course, you expect that. Boston Celtics at the Brooklyn Nets. Tatum versus Durant, Irving, and Harden. It'll only be the eighth or ninth time all year that those three would play at the same time for the Nets. And the Trailblazers Nuggets, interesting series, will be at 9:30 tomorrow night on ESPN. So you got four NBA games coming up tomorrow on Saturday. And then on Sunday, you'll have four more. You'll have the Sixers and Wizards at noon. You'll have the Suns Lakers at 2:30. You'll have the Knicks Hawks at 6 o'clock on Sunday. And then the evening game will be either the Warriors or Grizzlies against the Jazz Sunday night on TNT at 8:30. For all that information, you can go to NBA.com.
My hope, by the way, is that the Warriors blow out the Grizzlies tonight so we can say that this whole play-in thing was unneeded.
Yeah, because every game, every play-in game has been a complete blowout, not even close, except for the Laker-Warriors
game. Yeah, that's
the
only good game that's happened. I mean, that's probably the only game that we really thought.
Well, the Grizzly and Spur game was a 4-point game. That was close.
Yeah, yeah.
But those are two teams that weren't in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's like based on where we're at and where these teams are, everything's fallen right where it was supposed to. So
well, yeah, absolutely.
So I'm hoping the Warriors just blow out the Grizzlies and just like, this is an exercise in futility. Like, well, the seed stayed exactly what they were. Let's just move on with the playoffs.
The Celtics the Celtics cruised past the Wizards. That was 7-8.
The East has not been close at all.
This is interesting how it's gone. The Pacers, the 9, cruised past the 10 by 27. The 7 cruised past the 8 by 18. The 8 then cruised by the 9 by 27. That's the East. So that was, you know. In the West, you had the Grizzlies only won by 4 over the Spurs, although they were up pretty nice comfortably
early.
Yeah,
like 20 in the first quarter.
Yeah, and the Spurs came back and made it a game. And then you got Lakers-Warriors, and that, of course, was a great game. And now you got Grizzlies-Warriors. So the Western Conference playoff games have obviously been much better, at least
competitive, but it's still, right now, it's just playing out the same way as what the seeding would have, right? Yeah. And so it's just like, let's just move on and let's just start the playoffs.
I'm good with it.
I don't think it's going to change anything. I think this play-in thing is probably here to stay.
I think so too.
I don't think a lot of people like that, but it does help, I guess, the NBA for ratings, whatever they want from that aspect of it. But yeah, that's just me.
Well, no, I'm with you. And the other thing too is, you know, you look at the Hornets and the Pacers and the Wizards. We're all within a game of each other, and the Wizards now come away from that, and they were the hottest team down the stretch, winning 17 out of 23. So they're in. I think everybody would like to see them in, except for Indiana Pacers and Charlotte Hornet fans, you know?
Yeah.
They're the hotter team, and they'll be interest series with the Sixers. I mean, you got star power against the Sixers. I mean, you do. You got Simmons and Embiid versus Beal and Westbrook. I mean, this is not your normal eight-one series than the Pacers-Sixers would have been, right? Exactly. So this is not your normal 8-1. And then in the West, I mean, you know, the Lakers were 3 games better than the Warriors, and the Warriors barely lost. And the Warriors only 1 game better than the Grizzlies. So even the Grizzlies win tonight, you can't sit here and say, well, the play-in game really helped a team that was really bad get an extra chance that shouldn't have.
No.
That would have been if the Spurs would have played the Lakers 9 games worse to play tonight, but that wasn't the case. So, you know, that's the thing I was worried about was, you know, sometimes you see this in Major League Baseball playoffs where a division team wins a division with an 84-78 record, and then for some reason gets home field, plays a wild card, and then they win the series. But you're like, you know, they're not the better team, but they got benefited by the fact, even though they had a worse record, they got home field or something weird like that. And in this case, I don't want to see the teams that are, you know, 6 games under 500 make the playoffs, and the Hornets aren't going to, and neither are the Spurs. But then everybody else that's still alive, which now all they got is the Warriors, Grizzlies, they were each 6 and 4 games over 500 respectively. So I'm cool with whatever way it works tonight, to be quite honest with you. I mean, only 1 game separated from the standings. But that was the thing I was concerned about was, let's say the Spurs, you know, 6 games under 500, go and win 2 play-in games. It's like they should never have had a chance to get into the playoffs. That was my concern. And so far, like you said, it's worked out perfectly.
We've been good on that part of it.
But if you keep doing it, obviously, something will happen like that. A losing team will somehow win a couple games and get in the playoffs, and people will whine and complain.
In my mind, I'm thinking some of those teams that are the 10 seeds, right, how many of them have the same mentality that I do, right? This doesn't help me with the draft, and I'm going to get beat by the first.
Are you suggesting that there's tanking in play-in games?
I'm suggesting the Hornets did not look like they wanted to be there. the other night.
You have to.
They
wonder.
Got down early, and you it you they did not care.
You have
like,
to.
I
wonder.
Could see it.
Yes.
And this, but the Spurs, I mean, credit got down 20, fought back, right?
Well, that's. Pop.
And I think that's a Popovich thing. They're not. He's not going right. to say we're giving up, even if we do get a better
no,
draft pick
you.
Or whatever. I think that's
you.
Probably leadership on the front
I
of that.
I totally agree with you.
But it's like there are teams that are going to be like, what does this do for us?
If you're a young team like the Hornets.
Yeah.
What does it do for you? Now you're a veteran team.
Spurs like, too,
like,
really.
Well, like, for instance, like the Celtics and the Wizards, they're more veteran teams. So they're like, well, we've already, you know, we already acquired Russell Westbrook. We went all in. We got Tatum. We got Brown. We got Kemba Walker, whatever else. Although Brown's hurt. You know, those teams might still feel like, hey, we're talented enough. We can still make a run.
Yeah.
Because we have experience. But if you're the Hornets, like you said, and honestly, if the Grizzlies were a 10 seed, now they're not. They're a 9. The Grizzlies, I think, would benefit, even though they're young, to have playoff experience. If they could just play the Jazz and they get swept, who cares? At least they get some experience. So there is a benefit to that. But the question is, as those teams have to weigh, as you just kind of pointed out, the Hornets. Okay, we give up draft slots to lose to an 8 seed in the first round, that we're not even close to being good enough. We're 600-500. Are we better off losing this little play-in game so that we're going to be the 10th or 11th pick in the draft and have a really, really minute chance of winning the ping pong ball drop?
We got Lamelo last year. Let's go get another young guy to pair with him that we really like. And if I get caught in number 15 to 18 or something like that, I don't get to do that.
No.
Well, I mean, you'd be number whatever it is.
14.
I guess the Spurs would have done it. It would have been a different thing.
Right.
But
every team would
be four. But I can be, you know, maybe 11 or higher, maybe even, you know, get a good drop on that ping pong ball and get somebody to pair with LaMelo that I really like, and let's build this team, right?
Uh-huh.
It doesn't serve a purpose for me to get blown out and lose 3-4 spots in the draft.
I totally think you're onto that. I think the Hornets, once they got behind, were like, there's no point. I agree with you. So there's one of the negatives of the play-in tournament as well. Although you could kind of argue that if an 8 seed is a big underdog, they get in and it's like, you know, whatever. We lose. We're not too worried about it. But there, at least, you're not going to be in the lottery, so then there is an incentive to maybe try because you're low in the draft pecking order. So, no, I get your points, and I totally agree with you. All right, baseball and softball, high school yesterday, and then we'll preview regional track and field that we'll have reports coming up today.
Yeah, had a couple area league teams that were still alive in baseball and softball yesterday. The baseball was Southeast Saline, and they're the number one seed there at the Council Grove Regional. The games were actually held in Emporia yesterday. Southeast did win the semifinal game 8-5 over Osage City, but then they lost a tough one to Heston in the championship 3-2. So Southeast finishes 21-2. Regional runner-up just off making it to state again. Minneapolis has qualified for state from the NCAA in baseball. That'll be in Manhattan next week. And 2-1A regional softball at El Saline. It was Sacred Heart still alive there as the Lady Knights won over Ellis in 6 innings, 15-4 in the semifinals. But then suffered a loss to the top-seeded El Saline Lady Cardinals 8-2 in the championship game. So Sacred Heart finished their season 12-11, and they're done there on the softball side of things. So full softball and baseball brackets can be found at ncksports.com. Actually, Southeast Saline softball is still playing today, as their games were supposed to be on Wednesday and then moved to today in Heston. You can find all that, again, at ncksports.com. As Wade said, today is regional track and field. The Acacia meets will be held for our area teams, set to take place this afternoon and evening. In Class 3A, Beloit will be hosting their regional. All of our area 1A schools will be in Mankato at the Rock Hills Regional. And then in Class 2A, Smith Center is at Hill City today. We'll go through some of these notes and then hear from some coaches here in a bit as well. I'll be reporting from 1A regional this afternoon and evening in Mankato at Rock Hills High School. St. John's, Lakeside, Tipton, Osborne, Rock Hills, Thunder Ridge, Sylvan Lucas, Lincoln, Pike Valley, and Glasgow, competing against 19 other teams from North Central and Northwest Kansas. On the girls' side, J.C. Bath of Lincoln toward the top in all the distance runs. She has the number one time in the state in the 1600, number two just seconds off the top time in the 3200. Lauren Dubert of St. John's has the top mark in all four events that she will be competing in later today, the javelin, pole vault, 100-meter hurdles, and 300-meter hurdles. Also on the girls' side, Lakeside comes in to the regional after having won the Northern Plains League team title last week. We'll hear a little bit more about their individual chances from Jesse Cunningham here coming up momentarily, the Lakeside coach. Also shifting to 1A boys' ranks, Braden Perez of St. John's, Mason Scher of Osborne, Tyler Good of Lincoln, all toward the top of the state in the sprints, while Caleb Eilert of St. John's and Reagan Bales of Osborne have had great seasons in distance running.
St. John's also won the NPL meet last week, and we'll hear from Ben Letourneau, their coach, coming up as well about their confidence going into this 1A regional. Starts with the field events at 3 this afternoon, prelims at 4:30, finals 30 minutes after the prelims. And then in Class 3A at Beloit, the Trojans will be hosting 15 other teams that range as far east as Hiawatha, as far west as Norton, Ellsworth Southeast, and Minneapolis from the league are also going to be at this one. The Southeast boys, a clear favorite to win this regional. The Smoky Valley girls are the favorite on that side. And again, we'll hear from Ryan Isbell here momentarily as well from the Beloit Trojans. With the 3A regional meet, we'll start with javelin, pole vault, high jump at 2. Other field events at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and track prelims at 4:30, finals 30 minutes after the prelims. And then in Class 2A, it'll be similar there. Smith Center's competing at the Hill City Regional with 15 other teams. The Redmen and Lady Red have a chance to get a handful of athletes to the state meet in Wichita next weekend, and we'll be following that as well. Starts at 3 o'clock with field events in Hill City today in 2A. Track prelims 4:30, finals 30 minutes after the prelims there in Hill City. So that's a look at and a preview of the three area meets. Again, for updates on those area track athletes, 1A, 2A, and 3A regional track, listen to Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com this afternoon, starting at 3 o'clock, and then every half hour following, I'll be reporting from Mankato with results funneling in from the other sites. So we're looking forward to that. And also visit ncksports.com for more regional track and field information. I'm going to be trying to update kind of like I did from the Beloit Relays as far as Rock Hill is on that live Google Drive. So that link is actually posted at ncksports.com. It will be on my Twitter page at Dusty40 as well. So that's all coming up here today with regional track and field.
Very cool. Tag me on all that stuff as you can, and yep, I'll spread the word as well via social media and wherever else we can. And as we said, we're going to hear from some of the coaches. Jesse Cunningham with Lakeside provides the thoughts on her team and individual chances of going to state.
We're pretty excited. We've had a good year. Of course, everybody missed last year, so this year I feel like everybody's got just that little extra push in them to make something happen. Our girls' relays, the 4x1 and the 4x4, are both looking pretty strong, and so we're pretty excited about hopefully getting both of those to state and see what we can do there. We've got Caitlin Howland in the 300 hurdles. She just keeps improving, and she's ranked third right now in the regional, but she's running against two of the fastest times in the state, so pretty excited for that. Jumper-wise, we've got Bailey Cunningham and Lauren Brummett both have been triple jumping pretty well, but the triple jump's going to be pretty tough, so it'll just be anybody's day. In the javelin, Peyton Hake and Lauren Brummett are both setting pretty strong, so we're pretty excited to maybe get at least one, if not both of them, to stay this year.
So that's a perspective from Lakeside's point of view. For St. John's Tipton, Ben Letourneau, good chances for his squad to have some state qualifiers as they are facing some very familiar competition today at regionals.
I think it's going to go really well for us. We have a really competitive league, so a lot of the toughest competition we're going to see is going to be from kids that we've already seen. I mean, a good example is Braden Perez in the 100-meter dash. His toughest competitors are going to be Sure and Good from Osborne and Lincoln, respectively. And same thing, you know, looking at a lot of the jumps and in the 200 as well for Braden. Also on the distance side, Caleb Eilert's done really well. His toughest competition is going to be from Reagan Bales of Osborne. So, I mean, that's a good deal for us that the people that are going to push them the hardest are ones that they've raced before, competed against before.
That's a look from some of the 1A schools in our area. And then Class 3A, Beloit is hosting that regional today with some of those field events starting as early as 2 o'clock. Ryan Isbell, the head coach of Beloit Track and Field, on the competition regionals today and the chances for some of his individuals on his squad.
Kind of like normal, it's always pretty tough competition when you get to your regional. Doesn't matter really where you go. At this point in the year, you're seeing everybody's best. You hope everybody's peaking at this point, and the competition kind of reflects that. Boys and girls, both sides look to be awfully competitive kind of across the board. We got a handful of boys and girls that are in pretty good positions. You just got to go out and perform now. Three or four boys that have a chance with Grady Seifert and Brennan Walker and Wyatt Brockelman. A relay that's looks like it's worse than it is, but it's a 4x8, and we're 10 seconds out of fourth place. Well, in a 4x8, you know, you can shave that time off pretty quick if everybody has a really good day. And on the girls' side, we've got some borderline, a couple throwers, J.C. Carter, Sage Prohaska, that are sitting pretty well in the discus, and J.C. in the shot as well. And you go with Allie Hayfliger in the pole vault, who's kind of borderline. You know, if she has a clean day, she's got a really good shot. You know, we see that a lot, and you never know with regionals. You never know what nerves are going to do to people.
Yeah, you never do. No, I mean, if somebody scratches, somebody false starts, things like that, it can happen. Nerves can get to you. Sometimes kids thrive on that pressure. Sometimes kids wilt under that pressure, and everybody's a little bit different.
So it will be very interesting. One thing that really stood out to me about what you were saying earlier about everything in overview is Beloit's hosting a regional, and teams from Hiawatha and Norton are going to be there.
Yeah.
And in case, and we sit down here and we sit here and we worry about geography and have these bad matchups in the first round of football playoffs, and we're and we got teams that shouldn't be playing each other in the same district or whatever the case may be, or meeting in the second round. And the thing that is always hidden behind is, well, it's a travel thing and geography thing. Well, what are you going to say about that?
Yeah.
I mean, Hiawatha is very close. I mean, it's not that far from St. Joseph, Missouri, people. Mm-hmm. If you don't know where Hiawatha is, it's not that far away from the Missouri and Nebraska state line, by the way. And then, of course, Norton, most people around here know where Norton is. That is a long difference between two schools coming in two different directions to be in Beloit.
Yeah. Well, it's very similar. We don't have the Far East teams in Mankato, but it's St. Francis, Weskin, Sharon Springs are coming to Mankato, mm-hmm. and it's like, you probably would rather have like a central meeting point if you're those teams, but sure. I love it that it's right in Mankato for
backyard.
Me.
Because
I didn't have to go to Valley Heights or Washington this year. So.
Right.
But yeah, there's sooner or later you got to understand that you can't use that as an excuse anymore, because unless you have all the same size schools in the same places, you're going to have to travel. And that's what it's turning into right now. I mean, you got 1A, 2A, 3A spread around everywhere, and you can't get them all from one spot.
It's interesting. I don't remember hearing schools complaining about travel that much. I mean, I hear them complain, don't get me wrong, but what I mean is they don't say, well, that's a deal breaker. We're not going to compete in that playoff game. You know, it's like, it's not convenient, we don't like it, but we'll deal with it.
Yeah.
It's not like somebody's saying, I'm forfeiting because you're going to make us go 5 hours in a first-round game from Concordia to Hugoton, you know, or 6 hours, whatever it might be. You're still going to compete. So, you know, it's just – and what's the difference between 4.5 and 5.5? 1 hour, but, I mean, you just get to the point where they're going to be –
at that point, it's like
long
bus traveling,
rides
we're
no
traveling,
matter what.
It's going to be a late night.
Right,
early
no matter
morning,
what.
Whatever, whenever you go and leave and get back, whatever.
Exactly.
I mean – we've been dealing with it, and they act like it's not been an issue for a long time. Like, we went to a football game in 2004 in Leroy, Kansas, right?
Yes.
And it was not at the end of the football playoffs, right?
Right.
And it's just like, I was like, what are we doing, like, complaining about that right now? Because this is not, they act like that we didn't travel to Cimarron for regional tennis when I was in high school. Like, Cimarron, just because it's on the west side of the state, it's still really close. It's still like 2 hours away to go to Cimarron for a tournament, right? Or whatever it was. Great Bend we had one year. And it's like,
but that's a short trip.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, that's a short trip.
They're short trips, but we're still traveling, right?
Oh,
like,
you're
going to travel.
You're
going to
travel no matter what.
So let's stop hiding behind that.
I hear you. Like I said, you just do an east-west thing. You know, east, west, north, south, wherever you want to do it. Just make it straight down. And I know they try to do that. There's more schools to the east than the west. That makes it a little bit more complicated. And I'm not saying Keisha has an easy job. I know they don't. But you know, if you had a vote, I think teams would be like, you know what, if we can avoid having two undefeated teams in the second round of the football playoffs, and that means we got to travel 2 extra hours, we'll travel.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think both sides would agree on that.
Yeah.
Because you shouldn't have an unbelievable matchup that takes place in the second round of the playoffs when you could avoid it if you just seed the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what some states do, but exactly. Kansas does not.
I've always said we kind of get caught in that east-west formula in football too, right? Like, there's a team that's like 1 mile east of the other one, but it's also a 4-hour drive north.
Yes.
Like, what do we not care about north, south at all in anything?
Well, yeah, that's hard.
And so
to
it's
do.
Just like, you know, it's funny that you can be like, oh, we got to get a map out to see how – which one's further east or west, but who cares about the 4-hour drive south or north, right?
I know. I mean, that's not easy. I mean, either way you look at it,
doesn't matter.
It's going
to
be a long
drive. It's going to happen.
You could have a long drive from northwest to southeast.
Because I remember we were trying to figure out Otis and Kensington, because they were like literally like a mile apart east-west.
Right.
And we're like, who's further east and who's further west?
Right. Well, and you know, if you go in northwest to southeast or northeast to southwest, I mean, they're long drives no matter what.
Yeah.
You know? Right. If you got to deal with that. Okay, speaking of high school sports, I'm really perturbed, and I understand why it's done, although I will say I'm very, I don't know, we've talked about this before, I have a strong belief It's my belief. Not everybody shares this belief, obviously. I think most people that follow high schools, I know many broadcasters are in a profession that cover high school sports, are with me in this belief. And then there are the people that cover K-State beats that are, and KU beats that are rejoicing that there will be a college football game on a Friday night so they have their weekend free. It's like, you know, you have a job, you know, you do it. But anyway, I mean, wham. But you signed up for the job. You don't like working weekends? Quit. I mean, that's the thing. I don't. I mean, I saw some
covering college and pro sports. You pretty well are going to be working the weekends.
Yeah. So then they rejoice when college football games are on a Friday, and then people that would like to go to college games and can't go because they have kids involved in high school sports on Friday night, and so thus they can't go to a college game, which does hurt your attendance. And it. And then also, if people do go Friday, they're going to Friday night. They're going to get back way late. Now they have the weekend to recover. I get that part. But the point is, and if you don't know where we're going with this, let me fill you in. Lance Leipold's first season leading the KU football program will now include back-to-back Friday night games to open the 2021 season. KU announced yesterday that both the home opener against South Dakota and the Jayhawks Week 2 road game at Coastal Carolina have been moved up a day, slightly altering the previously released schedule. Leipold's KU debut will come September 3rd at David Booth's Kansas Memorial Stadium, 7 o'clock kickoff Friday night. On September the 3rd, the Jayhawks' third meeting with Coastal Carolina in 3 years will be on September 10th and air on one of ESPN's networks with the kickoff time still to be determined. It's going to be a thrill to open up the season under the lights at Memorial Stadium, said Leipold, so forth and so on. KU Athletic Director Travis Goff noted in the release that the 2021 opener will mark the first time since the 19 season that the football stadium will be able to be near capacity. After pandemic protocols limited attendance in 2020, he said, and I quote, "Kicking out the season and Labor Day weekend on a Friday night is exactly the type of excitement we're looking to generate as we build this football program." KU last played a Friday night home game, Black Friday in 2018, a couple years ago. If you remember, they played great on a Friday night at Boston College. That was really the highlight of the Les Miles regime, was when they won at Boston College, and that's when people thought KU was starting to turn around. KU football will not play on a Saturday until week three when Baylor comes to town. Okay, a couple things. This article doesn't have it because they're probably embarrassed to put it because it's on KUSports.com. But if I remember this correctly, the home opener will be, if you're talking about moving it to TV, so clearly Kansas is going to play South Dakota on ESPN, right? The main network. They're going to get lots of publicity. It's going to make total sense what KU is trying to do with their football program. I get that. You're going to be on ESPN or even ESPN2. You know, ESPN2 would be okay. That makes sense. First game, your coach, got a brand new coach. You're pretty excited about it. You know, I'm willing to. Oh, wait a minute. It's ESPN Plus?
Oh, we got to pay extra?
To watch South Dakota, Kansas? So we're moving a game on a Saturday to a Friday to conflict with Lawrence High School and Free State, which, by the way, high school football season does start that first Friday in September. That's the first week of the season, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah, it's so, never later than that.
No.
Like sometimes it'll be in August,
right,
but it's never later than
so
that.
So it's one thing if Kansas first moved Friday, up their September. Saturday game, let's say it was in August, moved it to Friday, because there's no high school game, usually. In this case, that's the first game of the year in high school football, and Kansas decides to move their game against South Dakota to under the lights on a Friday night, and then their away game at Coastal Carolina is also on a Friday night. So now imagine all, and I'm just going to use, I don't know, KD Country Night, never, Z96.3 Lake as an example. Mm-hmm. So we are a KU affiliate. We also cover local sports. I think most people around here know we try to do a really good job. We bust our butt to cover as many teams as we can. We like to have two games on the radio every Friday night for football. Dusty's at one site, I'm at another site. And many times we'll have our games will include three local teams, two local teams on one station and then one local team on another. Sometimes we get four. And so local is always a priority. It's number one priority. It always has been since we've been here. When we came in 2006, local is a priority. So if you're a KU fan right now, I'm just going to warn you, if you're going to be tuning in for college football on September the 3rd, And you don't hear KU on our stations, because I haven't officially made this decision, but I pretty much know where I'm going with it. High school is going to come first. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that. High school is going to come first. Our local is going to come first. All right?
Especially on the season opening night.
High school football. That's going to come first. So KU is going to play South Dakota, and then you're going to have to pay to watch it on ESPN+. And or you're going to have to find somewhere else on the radio to listen to. And here's the crazy thing. So Kansas is moving their game to a Friday night. So that means people in Lawrence, schools, high schools, Free State, their football games. Those people ain't gonna be able to go watch KU. And KU's like, we're all excited because it can be the first time we can be, and did you say able to be near capacity? They added the word able. Because yeah. Most places, it'll be a packed house. And you're sitting here like, I don't care if it's Saturday or Friday night. That place ain't going to be full.
Even with a new coach, they won't be at capacity.
It won't be at capacity. Game. And you're sitting here kicking off your Labor Day weekend. Well, you can kick off your Labor Day weekend, a 1 o'clock game on Saturday afternoon. Mm. I mean, you know what? How about here, Travis Goff. Here's how I'm going to kick off my Labor Day weekend. I'm going to go to a high school football game instead of a college football game between KU and South Dakota.
Yeah.
All right? And I'm not – I mean,
off Labor Day weekend. Why not just do it Thursday night?
Exactly.
I mean, that'd be –
why not?
That'd be real fun, right?
You
Thursday
bet.
Night, we'll kick it off.
Why
Let's
not?
Go to a high school game on Friday.
Yeah.
Let's go to Manhattan on Saturday.
That would make more sense.
I mean, people can go everywhere there.
I think it's tone deaf. That's what I think it is. I know colleges are only worried about themselves. They ain't worried about the high school. Here's the other thing. KU, a new head coach. Well, we really want to focus on high school recruiting. We want to do this and this. And the first thing you do with your new head coach is move your games to Friday night. Makes total sense.
Yeah.
Now, listen, like I said, I would understand it if it's going to be on primetime ESPN or even ESPN2. But the second one might be on ESPN2. I don't know. They haven't officially showed this according to the KU schedule. But
yeah,
ESPN
Coastal
Plus,
Carolina,
is,
it might be.
Yeah, but ESPN Plus is what I've been hearing from everybody for that first game, because I don't think ESPN
they're
or
not,
even ESPN2 wants South Dakota
no,
KU
they're
on
not
Friday
going
night.
In on South Dakota, no matter where it's at,
yeah.
With Kansas, I
mean. Right? So, I know it's already been starting. It's been happening, but this it's irritating. It's frustrating. And it's not just one, but it's two. Now, granted, the second one is on the road. But if you're a KU fan and you're a high school fan, or if K-State did the same thing, you could put your favorite school in the situation. If Nebraska moved their games on Friday night, and you're going to miss watching Nebraska play because you got a kid playing high school, but you shouldn't have to choose, is my point.
Yeah.
You should not have to choose. In this situation, you should not have to choose between high school football or college football, not one, but two Fridays in a row. To start the season. So I don't like it at all. In fact, I despise it.
Yeah, I got into it and kind of we thought about it that the one time K-State's moved a game to a Friday, and that was North Dakota State right in 2013. And, mm-hmm. and I was up in arms like, well, high school doesn't start until the next week. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's fine.
Yeah, sure.
You know, that's like not a big deal. Now, if you're a K-State fan from Missouri, there were games that night. Mm-hmm. In high school because they start earlier than us. But
right.
So if you had kid from Missouri, Skylar Thompson wasn't on that team, but an example, right? If Skylar had a brother that was playing high school, parents can't – I mean, they got to pick which one they want to go to, right? And,
mm-hmm.
and that's – I think some people don't maybe think about that too, right? Like, I got kids that are playing high school football, but I also have a kid that's on the KU football team, right?
Yeah,
and
that
so,
could happen.
You know, that could happen too, mm-hmm. right? Easily go to a home game – and go to both games no matter where it's at in the state because you can make that drive.
Yeah.
And that's obviously a very, 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 very slim portion of people
yes.
that we're talking about there, but still it's a choice that you're forcing them to make.
Right.
And so I've never been a fan of high college football, honestly, on any other day than Saturday, to be completely honest. But
right.
I've gotten used to those Thursday night games. Now, when K-State played Louisville on a Wednesday, that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But you know, some of those things, but you get used to it. But it's just like, selfishly, I don't like it because I'm working that night and I can't watch the games,
well,
right?
Yeah.
And then also, like I'm working that night and focusing on getting all these high school scores. Now I got to add in,
right.
I got to follow KU because I know people aren't going to be able to listen to it, right? So I need to make sure I'm on top of that, too. And it's just like, woe is me, right? First
sure.
world problems that I got to go find one more score. But,
right.
But it's just the fact of you can avoid that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know that they're.
I don't know how there's a big advantage to KU.
I don't know how it
opinion.
Helps the ratings either.
Me neither.
Like, you people that are out and not even in, they're going to be at football games Friday, at high school games. How does that help more people watch?
To me, it's strictly a recruiting thing. They're thinking, well, but the thing is, a lot of kids are going to play high. They're going to be playing that night.
Yeah.
So the kids aren't going to be
watching
KU football either. So I don't think they get extra money because this game, I don't know how it all works. And it says on ESPN's Family and Networks is what KU Sports says about the second game. They actually don't say anything in the story about the first game.
And Coastal Carolina, the way those games have gone the last couple of years, could easily be on like ESPNU or ESPN2. Yeah. That's probably not going to be on the main network.
Right.
But I mean, South Dakota, Kansas, because Coastal Carolina has actually established a brand, right? And so, but South Dakota, no.
So you're going to bump a Saturday to a Friday, and you're going to have the same bad TV deal.
I mean, that would have been on ESPN Plus no matter what.
It doesn't matter what night that game
it would have.
I mean, that's just
the way that the contract's written up, right? KU's sports properties. I mean, if it's not on one of the main networks, and that's always that game, right? That FCS game is always the game that the host school really determines where they want to put it, right?
Right.
And I mean, unless they can get somebody big to come do it, but usually those FCS games, they're not on the main networks. They're on your streaming, or it used to be your ESPN Plus or your Jayhawk Network, or you know, K-State used to be on Fox Sports Midwest or whatever, Kansas City. Now all that third tier stuff is on ESPN Plus. So it doesn't matter what day you play it, that's where it's probably going to be.
Yeah. Well, I don't like it, and I don't think there's a big advantage for KU to do this. I really don't. But I mean, they want to be under the lights. Well, patch your game Saturday night at 7. He could be on, you know, he could be on, like, they're on, if you have Saturday night at 7, you could have people going to volleyball and the tournament be over and they can still go, because there are conflicts no matter what day. I get that.
Yeah.
You know? But we're talking, you know, keeping football separate a little bit. And it's just, it just keeps overlapping more and more on Friday nights for the high school kids. And if your reason is to target kids in recruiting, they ain't going to be watching because they're playing high school football the same night. Hello.
Yeah.
But I'm sure
Oklahoma
it's a money
State
thing.
State has multiple times opened on a Thursday night, right?
Why not?
Like, so if you want to play under the lights, play Thursday night.
Yeah,
if
I don't know why. I mean, why can't we play
there's
Thursday?
Way more teams that are, and they probably like, oh, because we don't want to compete with other people. We want to be the show on the thing, on ESPN Plus. So there's not a lot of options for people to watch. We're one of the only options for people to watch. And it's like, people still aren't going to watch.
Well, that's kind of my thing.
This is Kansas football. It's not like.
It's not a must-see event. No, I just can't stand it. Don't like it.
No, you don't even have to watch live and go watch the replay on ESPN Plus, right? How's that helping you?
Right. Now, people be forewarned. If you're a big KU football fan, odds are we'll join it in progress the first week or two. It's high school is going to come first. We're a local sports station. We're not the KU sports station. We're not the K-State sports station. We're a local station that covers our teams in our area. Do we cover K-State and KU? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But that's a secondary focus for us. Our main focus is our local news, weather, and sports. Those are the three main categories that we work on here locally. And then we try to promote whether it's local events or, you know, community calendars. We've got, you know, funeral notices that we pass along. We have birthdays in the morning, anniversaries, things like that. We're going to try to be as local as we can, as we always have been. And we're not going to have a college team move their games to two Friday nights. And by the way, they haven't said nothing to us, and I'm not saying that they will. But, I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm going to tell you right now, from a business standpoint, we make more money doing high school football than having a KU football game on a Friday night. So, you know, I guarantee you there's some affiliates that aren't very happy about this either.
Oh, no.
I know. If I have a couple others.
Well, we're not the only ones that are going to deal with that.
And they never ask the affiliates, what about this? They don't care. It's all about money. I'm sure this is a money thing, more than likely. I don't know how much more money they get by having a Saturday to a Friday. I don't, but I don't like it. And I know you don't either. And no offense, I'm not worried about you adding scores to your sportscast or whatever.
No, yeah.
But I get your point. It is.
I'm trying to find all these
you
scores.
You can't focus completely on high school. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. By the way, KU gets scored.
By the way, KU's playing South Dakota tonight. Lance Leipold's.
And people are like, they still have a football program?
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Who's Lance Leipold?
Who's Lance Leipold? I thought Les Miles was their coach. What happened to Merrick Mangino? Oh, that was a ways back. That's when they were last relevant. The Royals return to divisional play tonight as they will battle the Detroit Tigers. Mike Minor on the Hills. Last start is very good. He went 7 innings. If you keep that going, the Royals have a good chance tonight. Royals 20-22 on the season. They are 6 games out of first. White Sox have a 2.5 game lead over the Indians, and then the Royals are in third place in their division. In the East, the Red Sox have a 1 game lead over the Rays, and the Yankees are coming on strong. And Toronto is 4 games over 500, only 2.5 out. In the AL West, Houston has a 1.5 game lead over Oakland. And in the NL East, the Mets, the only team above 500, a 1.5 game lead over Philadelphia. The Cardinals have a 3 game lead over the Cubs. And San Francisco has a 1 game lead over the San Diego Padres. And the Dodgers are 2 games out in the NL West. So the Royals back in action tonight at 7:10 at Kauffman Stadium against Detroit. Tomorrow will be Brady Singer on the hill against Detroit at 3:10 in the afternoon, and then Chris Bubich on the hill on Sunday afternoon at 1:10. Then the Royals go to Tampa Bay. So a short three-game set here with the Tigers after a short two-game stint with the Brewers. Royals-Tigers coming up once again tonight, game one of that three-game series, and that will be at 7:10. Speaking of the Dodgers, I mentioned that they are third in their division but have one of the better records in baseball. We have talked about baseball and its problem with strikeouts. We talked about that yesterday, that a lot of players are not making contact and don't seem to even care if they don't make contact. Back in the day, you used to care about contact and you were embarrassed if you struck out. Now it's accepted. The batting average across the entire Major League Baseball, the team batting average, and this is every single team, every single player combined into one. The average batting average, seems redundant, right? The average batting average is .236. This would be the lowest batting average in league history. The last time it was under .240 was 1968, the year before Major League Baseball lowered the mound when it was .237. So the batting average right now is .236. So we've had six no-hitters in Major League Baseball. Surely pitchers are excited about that, right? Surely, you know, one of the best pitchers in the game, considered probably the best pitcher in the game, as long as he's healthy, is Clayton Kershaw.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what Clayton Kershaw said about all the no-hitters in Major League Baseball. This is his direct quote, Clayton Kershaw. "Well, it's not good, I'll tell you that. I think whatever the intention was with the new baseball or whatever it may be, it really hasn't done anything. There might be less home runs, which I guess they want, but I don't know the stats on all that. But I do know that strikeouts are the same. I think I saw some stats for April that was the worst hitting month in the history of something. No hitters are cool. I have all the respect in the world for Corey Kluber and Bumgarner and all those guys that have thrown no hitters. But to have one happen every night, it seems like it's probably not good for the game. Fans want to see hits. I get that and some action and not many people striking out. I appreciate the attempt that Major League Baseball has tried to do, but I think it seems like they missed the mark on this one so far. We'll see. I don't know." Kershaw himself has a no-hitter to his credit. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's a surefire Hall of Famer. And here's a pitcher saying that he doesn't want to see more no-hitters. So he gets it.
Mm-hmm.
He gets it. I think a lot of players are more into – honestly, I think more players are in tune with what's happening than maybe some of the higher-ups in Major League Baseball with what's happening in the sport. And so it's very interesting when Clayton Kershaw says something like that. I saw something that was really stupid. And I will also just say it. I saw it on social media. Mad Dog Russo, I don't know, he needs to retire. He's in New York. He's a loudmouth guy that, you know, yells and screams and does whatever. And I saw John Kurtz post this. Did you see that?
I did not see it.
I had to comment on it. But anyway, Mad Dog Russo goes, well, like one of his first points is that people aren't watching anyway. People aren't watching baseball. Nobody's watching baseball. And then he goes on to use Henry Hank Aaron as an example of a guy. Do you think he would defy a coach's take sign and hit 3-0 in a 16-4 game, which it was 15-4, by the way? Do you think he would go ahead and try to hit a homer against a position player throwing a 47-mile-an-hour pitch? I think you all know the answer to that. And if you don't know the answer, then you don't know Henry Hank Aaron, who is the all-time home run leader. And I'm sitting here going, what the hell is your point? Because, first of all, Hank Aaron, I looked it up. The last time Hank Aaron played baseball, the last time he played in the big leagues was the year I was born, 1976.
And it was in the early to mid-70s he last played.
1976, and he played over the course of the 50s, 60s, and into the 70s. Mm-hmm. He finished at the age of 42. I'm 45. I was born in 1976. I don't know if anybody knows this, but in the last 4.5 decades, things have changed. We've changed presidents. Yeah. We have smartphones. We have all kinds of technology. We've got social media. Back in the day, we used to not have indoor plumbing. Back in the day, we had horses and buggies, and we didn't have cars. We didn't have airplanes. You know, there were actually, at one point, no roads through the mountains. It's pretty amazing stuff. But, you know, things change. And Mad Dog Russo comes across as an old curmudgeon who is making no sense. And what's funny was he said no one's watching, and then he's sitting here, you know, upset and saying that Henry Hank Aaron would never have done that, and that the young people need to understand things and so forth and so on, and that it's respect for the game, you know, by hitting a 3-0 pitch when you shouldn't have been hitting it. Hank Aaron would never do that. First of all, nobody brought up that Hank Aaron would do that. So why is Hank Aaron the example? Oh, because he hit the most home runs in baseball history. And the last time he played was 4.5 decades ago. The second thing is, he said in his whole little diatribe that nobody's watching anyway. So if you're not if people aren't watching anyway, then why are you talking about it? Why do you care? Secondly, if you're saying nobody's watching anyway, do you think that'll bring fans back watching a guy watch a 3-0 pitch right down the middle that's 47 miles per hour? Clayton Kershaw just said people want to see more hits. Do you think that's going to bring people back to watch the game is to, ooh, good job by the guy taking the pitch on 3-0. Are you kidding me? People want more hitters to hit. They want hitters to swing. They don't want to watch strikeouts. They do not want to watch a guy take a 3-0 pitch no matter who it's from. The Mad Dog Russo needs to understand that, and I hate to be really rude here, but his generation of fans are dying, literally. And the younger generation, they want excitement. They want to be entertained. So you can poo-poo the young generation all you want, and you can rip the young generation, and you can say today's players don't understand and this and that. That's fine. But Hank Aaron is probably not the best example. That was 45 years ago when he played his final game. His argument carries no water. I don't know what it was. I don't know if he woke up on the wrong side of bed. But if nobody's watching anyway, then why do you think somebody's going to be listening to you about this? If nobody cares, he says, his words, nobody cares about baseball. Nobody's watching it. So why do you just spend 5 minutes talking about it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just funny about, like, we haven't sit here. We talk about baseball's problems. We talk about how the younger generation's tuning it out. We talk about how baseball's average viewer is getting older. What we've never said on this show is no one's watching. But that's what Mad Dog Russo said. No one's watching. Well, if no one's watching, why are you talking about it? Yeah. That means nobody cares.
Yeah.
And if nobody cares, then why do we care about a 3-0 pitch being hit or not hit? It made me laugh. It made me laugh hysterically. It's like some things have changed in the last 45 years. This just in. So I think players get it more than the traditional old fan base.
Oh yeah,
I think
for sure.
Players get it. I think some of the managers get it. Obviously Tony La Russa doesn't get it. And it's like, you know, this is like, I tell you what, Mad Dog Russo came off yesterday. What I saw, he came off as the person that walks into a grocery store and is just absolutely upset that one item was moved to a different aisle and has a conniption fit. And I'm like, and I know people that do that, by the way. And I understand we're all routines. Listen, if my wife goes into my dresser drawer and she takes all my shorts and boxers and puts them in the top drawer and she moves my socks to the bottom drawer, I'm probably not going to be happy about it initially. But guess what? I could put it back the way I want it, or I can live with it and go, oh, maybe there's a reason she did that. You know, the point is, change is constant in life. And if you don't get on board, well, what's the Ferris Bueller's line? What is it? Life moves fast. You know, life moves fast. How does he say that? Life moves
fast.
Slow
down.
Basically get on the train.
Put me on the spot, I don't remember.
Basically get on the train or you won't be on. I mean, you basically get on it and it'll take you where you need to go.
I think it's like if you don't slow down once in a while, it might pass you by.
It might pass you by, yeah. So you can slow down and appreciate things, but at the same time, life goes fast. And so if you are really against change, which is fine, you have the right to be against change. I mean, we all, in some form or another, don't like change. I'm sure I will be that way as I get older and older, okay? But at the same time, as we said, death, taxes, and change are the only constants in life. There are no guarantees. Major League Baseball has changed, and you have to deal with it. If you're a baseball fan, I'm sorry, you're going to have to deal with it. Just like, you know, you don't like having to get on the computer to do anything. Well, guess what? You're going to have to either figure it out or bring somebody over to help you figure out a computer. And I know that might not be ideal. You've grown up your whole life without a computer. You don't want to learn it. I understand it. I do. I'm sure I'll be that way. When I'm 70, I'll probably like, I already know how to do this. I don't want to learn this. I get it. I'm not trying to be mean to people. I totally get that. But the point is that you have to at least have a little bit of knowledge so you can do something. All right. My mom has a smartphone, and I will bet you she doesn't know how to run 90% of what's on her smartphone. Mm-hmm. But she has a smartphone. She knows how to make calls. She now knows how to send pictures via text. Okay. She's at least, what's the word we're saying? Dangerous with a smartphone to where she can do something. Right. So she's adapted and she has it. And I'm sure she's gotten frustrated at times, but she's adapted. She doesn't have the old flip phone, or she has the landline and then has no cell phone. Nobody can get a hold of her. She has adapted. My mom has adapted that way. My dad has adapted to looking up stuff that he's looking to buy on the computer. Mm-hmm. Does it take my dad a little longer to find what he's looking for? Yes, I've seen it, and I somewhat comical. But at the same time, that'll be me someday, all right? So be careful, Wade, on what you wish for here. But my dad, and the point is, my dad, whether it's been reluctantly or whether he's been openly willing to accept it, he has adapted to, hey, I'm looking for panels, corral panels. I'm looking for an old farm truck. I'm looking for a planter. I'm looking for a used tractor, combine, whatever it might be. My dad is going online and has quicker access to, and then has a better chance of finding the deal that he wants instead of having to make phone calls that take a lot more time. And then if the people aren't there to answer the call, he's relying on people to call him back. And of course, what happens? Half of them don't call you back. And then you're even more upset than you would be upset about getting on a computer and looking up a website. So the point of my story is my mom and dad are in their 70s. They've adapted. Now, are they on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok? And no, they're not. I'm not even on all that stuff, okay? I'm not saying they've totally embraced it. I'm not saying that they're more hip and cool than me or even my kids. The answer is no. Well, they might be more hip than me, but they're not more hip than my kids. You can tell them that. The point being is they've adapted. They have at least acknowledged and understand that this is part of my life, and I need to be on those devices, at least somewhat. I at least have to have a little bit of knowledge to be able to work them, maybe bare minimum, but at least I know so that I don't need to call my daughter or my son or my grandkids and say, hey, can you help me do this? Now, granted, you still might have to call and say, I can't find this website. Can you help me? Can you work me through this? I have a problem with my computer. But in regards to logging on, not even really logging on, you get on and you can type in your websites and you do searches and all that, and you do your phone and you can search for stuff and you can text and you send a picture of something out on the farm, which my dad did. He had something that broke down. My dad didn't do this. My mom knows how to. My mom took a picture with her smartphone. She sent the picture to me of this item that my dad is trying to find a replacement for on the farm, because I know some people up in this area. And then I looked for it online. So I was looking, they were looking, but my mom took the picture, sent it to me. Now, how would that have been done in the old days? I wouldn't get a picture.
No.
I'd have to go out to the farm and look at it.
If you wanted to see it, you'd have to go physically
look at it. I would physically have to go look at it. Or they wouldn't even bother telling me about it. And then they wouldn't have another set of eyes looking for this item that my dad is looking for. And so there's advantages to the technology we have. There are certainly disadvantages. We've discussed that with the political side of things and agendas and social media. There's good and bad with anything. But the point being is my mom and dad have not been completely stubborn, and they have actually adapted. And I'm sure they've complained every once in a while, like, God dang computer, you know, that darn phone.
Nature, right?
Right, we all do that. But my mom and dad have adapted. I'm proud of them for doing that. Now, my dad's not fully adapted. He can't take a picture, put it on the phone, and send it to me. But mom can. And as long as mom can do it, that's fine. I don't have to run out there and do it, so that's cool. Okay? So getting back to the whole Mad Dog Russo comparing 1976 baseball to 2021 baseball is like me comparing a 2020 Ford F-150 to a 1968 Ford Fairlane. There is no comparison. It's futile and it's stupid. And quite honestly, it's really, and I'll point the finger at us on this one, it's, and we get caught up in it a little bit, it's really, really silly to compare LeBron to Michael. All right? It's really silly to compare anybody from one generation back in the 60s or 70s or 80s or even the 90s to now, because we've already, two decades. Let's think about this for a second. I know this might make people feel old. We are two decades removed plus from the 90s.
Yeah.
Do you know that oldies music is now the 80s? Growing up, for me, it was 60s was old music, right? 70s kind of. 80s and 90s was the stuff. Now, it's funny. I've heard people say, well, 90s are oldies. And like, no, they're not. Like, I'm like, hello, do the math. Yeah. Anything that's over 20 years old, we're looking at pretty much oldies. You know, I got Throwback Thursday. I always thought it has to be the 80s and the early 90s. I'm like, hello, Throwback Thursday 90s, can be 2000 or 1999.
Yeah.
I mean, that's two. I mean, we're talking 20 years ago. Like, I got movie clips that I play and I'm like, oh my God, they're 12 years old. That seemed like it came out yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The point is that movies change. How about the graphics on video games? How much have they changed the years? Yeah. Does Mad Dog Russo want to go back? Because he probably don't play video games. But do you really think people want to go back to not having the internet? Do you think people want to go back to not having able to take a picture on a smartphone and send it?
Some people do.
Some people might. Some, but they're in the minority, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
But do you think that people want to go back to no indoor plumbing and you can't flush your toilet and got to go to an outhouse? Do you think people want to go back to the non-power windows on your car? I mean, some people actually are cool with the roll-up windows. I'm so glad I don't do that anymore. Do you think people want to go back to no power steering on their vehicles? Because I drove farm trucks on the farm. You talk about a workout, you actually had to turn the wheel. You know,
wheat truck during the summer stuff, you don't want power steering anymore.
Right, exactly. So, you know, Mad Dog Russo wants to live in 1976. Power be to him that he wants to live in 1976 because Hank Aaron would take a 3-0 pitch and listen to his manager. But everybody's different. People have been raised differently. Time has changed. That was 45 years ago. And so either get on the train at the station or just stay there, sit there, and, you know, yell at yourself. Because it's going to happen whether you like it or not. So it's either get on board and at least learn something to where you can fit in a little bit, or you just go ahead and you can live in your hole in the ground, you can live under a rock, and you can try to do it all old school, and trust me, you'll have even more frustrations doing it old school, because everybody else has passed you by with the changes that have happened. I'm not saying it's right, I'm not saying it's what you asked for, but that's always a constant in life. You don't think things change when my grandpa, who died last summer at the age of 99, you don't think things change when he was one of 11 kids in a two-bedroom house in the 1930s? Do you think in 1968 my grandpa's going, well, 1930, we didn't have air conditioning, so we're not turning it on right now in 1968, or whatever it might be. Well, we didn't have TV in 1930, so I don't care if there's TVs being sold out there, little boys and girls. I'm sorry, we're not buying a TV, because I didn't have a TV. You're not getting a TV! Oh, we're getting color TV. Mom, Dad, we want color TV. You have a black and white TV, and you're going to like it. You know why? Because that was what your dad watched. And you're going to like it, by golly. And when you get out in the real world, if you want to blow your money on this silly TV contraption with color, that's your thing. But back in my day, we were just fine without it. So you're going to be fine without it. That don't work. That don't work. It just will not work. You have to adapt and adjust. What do we say in sports? Within a game, what do you have to do? Within any sport, I don't care what the sport is. You have to adapt, right? You have to adapt as a pitcher to a hitter to a pitcher. You got to adapt to a guy with a long leadoff at first. You got to adapt in basketball to a guy that can shoot a deep three. You got to adapt to a guy that can use his left hand, his right hand, driving to the hoop. In swimming, you got to adapt to, first of all, the opposition in the next lane because they're getting stronger and better. You also have to adapt to the surroundings. You have to adapt to the water, the temperature. Your body has to adapt whether you even know you're adapting. Mm-hmm. There's adapting in every single sport. In golf, you have to adapt to the conditions. Every shot you have to adapt as to whether it's a good lie or if it's not a good lie. You have to adapt to the surroundings, the environment, and anything that you do in life. Think about it. You have to adapt when you're driving a car when it suddenly is raining outside. You have to adapt when there's a bit of ice outside. If there's a storm, you need to adapt. You have to adapt to traffic. We all have to adapt. And people don't even understand how much we're adapting every single day, all the time. And then when it's something like a batter swinging at a 3-0 pitch down 15-4, that's when it's too much. We just refuse to adapt and just say, you know what? It's okay. Let's move on. It's just maddening. Mad Dog Russo. And the thing is, there are other people that feel and agree with him on some of that stuff. But yeah, I'm just sitting here going, dude, you got to move into the, you got to move into the 21st century, man. You got to get into the 2020s. All right, we're not just turning the calendar into 2020. We're in 2021. You need to get into the 2000s.
Yeah. Get into
get into the 80s.
So get into the 2000s with the actual home run leader, right? Because there's not an asterisk next to Barry Bonds' name. Why are you not comparing what Barry Bonds would have done in that situation?
And Barry Bonds would have
hit
the ball.
Talk about the all-time home run leader, right? Because it's not Hank Aaron anymore.
No, it's not.
I mean, I think a lot of people believe it still is.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people believe it was Babe Ruth still. Like, right. He's the home run king. He's obviously not the leader.
See, Mad Dog can't even adjust to the actual home run king.
Yeah, and it's like, listen, I know that. In my mind, there's like an unwritten rule of baseball. There's an unwritten asterisk next to Barry Bonds, but it's not on there on the official records. So
He is the home run king. The thing about what Mad Dog said there is, like, one of the things I hate the most about when people argue about sports or politics, whatever it is retroactive hypotheticals.
Yes.
Like, you're talking about something that could not, would not, and did not happen with Hank Aaron. You know why? Because pitchers were pitching 8-plus innings, maybe 9. Hank Aaron was never going to see a position player, a backup catcher, throw him pitches. So you can't even ask the question. It's a retroactive hypothetical of something that never could have happened. Now, we deal in hypotheticals sometimes about if Kawhi Leonard would have made this free throw, Ray Allen's shot wouldn't have mattered, right? I'm doing that as a personal sports fan with the Spurs in 2013.
Right.
But it's just like, we deal in hypotheticals, and I understand you do that sometimes. But retroactive hypotheticals don't do anything. It doesn't do any good for me to say, well, Michael could have played in today's game, or LeBron could have played. This is what LeBron would have done in the night. No, it didn't happen. We don't know what would have happened. We can't even fathom what would have happened.
You know why people like saying that? Because they know they can't be wrong.
Exactly. They need something else to frame an argument. And I will tell that to my boys in our Twitter group. We like to argue sports, right, and give our sides of things. And I will always say I do not deal in hypotheticals. Even I try not to deal in just regular hypotheticals of things that have already happened. Now, if you're prognosticating, you have to deal in hypotheticals. Right. That's what they are. They're predictions. You don't know what's going to happen. You're saying what you think might happen.
Sure.
But with all that stuff, it's like, why are we bringing Hank Aaron into this discussion when he last played in 1976? When the whole landscape of the game, the whole landscape of the country was different when Hank Aaron was playing, because there were people that did not like Hank Aaron at that time. Point blank racist, right? Yes. You know, that's what it was for some of them people then. And if it's just we're living in a different time, and you can't even bring that into the discussion.
Like, I know. I'd like to ask Mad Dog Russo, would you go ahead and like all of these score graphics taken off to where you don't know what the score is when you tune in on TV? Because they didn't have them back when Hank Aaron played.
Well, you maybe can flash to a live shot of the scoreboard.
Yeah.
This is the only way you can know what.
Usually it's at the end of the inning.
Or they had that graphic. You actually used to be able to like transpose the scoreboard onto the onto the screen. Right. But it was an actual scoreboard. It wasn't a score bug.
That's right. Yeah. This is a good one. This is from a friend of mine who, I hope I'm not going to insult him here, but he's older than me, all right, and he's a great person. And he goes, wow, the older ones liked Hammer and Hank hitting the ball. And if someone threw a pitch like that, they had better been ducking as it left the park, or their hat and part of their head would have gone with the ball. You know, that's a good point that he makes here that I hadn't even thought about. Mad Dog's all caught up in that Hank Aaron wouldn't have swung on 3-0. But what he's not acknowledging at all, and the reason why the game has changed, is that it's entertainment. And even in 1976, as this person texted me, he's making a good point. 1976, it was still about entertainment. And in 2021, it's still about entertainment. Mm-hmm. Do you think fans in 1976 want Hank Aaron to go ahead and take on a 3-0, 47-mile-an-hour pitch down the middle? Do you think, that's 45 years ago. Yeah. From that standpoint, fans didn't want him to take. They want him to hit. In fact, a lot of times they probably went to the game waiting for him to hit a home run because he was a home run champion. That's why people went and watched Barry Bonds.
Play, right?
Right.
We want to see
Hank Aaron, Hammer and Hank. That was his nickname. Hammer and Hank. You want to see him hit the ball. You don't want to see him take pitches. So Matt DeGrusso is sitting here going about Hank Aaron. He's totally missing the boat on this whole thing. He should be looking at it just like this person sent to me. That honestly, the one thing that is constant, in 1976, fans wanted to see a guy hit the ball out of the park. In 2021, they still do.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably why there's that emphasis on hitting home runs that we talked about that's created another problem, and that is a lot of strikeouts. And by the way, it's kind of ironic, don't you think? Alanis Morissette, look it up. Hank Aaron, you know what age he retired? 42.
40, yeah.
In 1976. You mentioned Barry Bonds, who is actually the home run record holder. There's no asterisk. He has 7 more homers than Hammer and Hank Aaron. So Russo's using Hammer and Hank, which is 45 years ago, when the better comparison would be to use the actual home run champion right now, which was a guy that last played 14 years ago, which is still a decade and a half ago. Yeah. And he hit 762 home runs, who, oddly enough, retired at the age of 42, just like Hank Aaron. But here's my question. If you're going to talk about home run champions and he wants to use Hank Aaron, who technically isn't anymore, let's go to the current all-time home run champion, Barry Bonds. All right, 762 home runs. And let's ask that same question, and let's call Mad Dog Russo. Do you think Barry Bonds on a 3-0 pitch with a 47-mile-an-hour fat pitch from a position player coming down the middle, do you think Barry Bonds has taken that?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Barry Bonds is making you pay for it because he's tired of you walking him on four straight pitches.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, how many home runs would he have had if he would not have gotten walked so much? I mean, I'm pretty sure he's the intentional walk leader by far.
In 2004, Barry Bonds was walked 232 times.
Yeah, and the majority of those were intentional.
Yes.
Like, he was not just sitting there waiting to get walked.
Oh, yes. Yes, I don't have... 120. 120 intentional walks in 2004. 2004, Barry Bonds had 617 plate appearances, but only 373 at-bats because walks don't count as at-bats. So he, and despite that, he hit four... Think about this for a second. Barry Bonds, whether you think he cheated or not, Barry Bonds, in only 373 official at-bats, hit 45 homers and 101 RBIs. He was walked 232 times. 120 of those were intentional. And he only struck out 41. He only struck out 41 times, Dusty. Think about that for a second. He had 45 homers, 101 RBIs, and 373 official at-bats. Had he been pitched normally, he would have probably hit 70 that year, too.
Oh, yeah.
This is pretty crazy. Barry Bonds in 2001 was walked 177 times, and the next year 198, the next year 148, and the next year 232. His last year in the league, when he was 42, Barry Bonds was walked 132 times. Barry Bonds,
I want to pitch to him.
Barry Bonds was intentionally walked in his career 688 times. That's a season's worth of at-bats.
And that doesn't count the pitchers that are hitting corners and walking them, right?
Yes.
Like, those are not intentional walks because they're actually trying to pitch to
you.
There's plenty of those walks that he has, too, that are like, okay, we're going to pitch to you, but you're not getting anything you can hit, and we're going to walk you.
So I'm glad that you said Barry Bonds, and people may be listening to us going, okay, now where are we? Are you going down a different road here, Wade? You're mentioning the walks, and why are you mentioning the walk numbers? I thought we were talking about home runs and swinging 3-0. Well, listen, I have my reasons for how I always say I have a method for my madness on this show. So here's the method of madness, and now it'll all tie together just like a bookend to the end of a Seinfeld episode. And for younger people out there, Seinfeld, never mind. So here's the thing I'm asking. Barry Bonds is the career leader in home runs, not Hank Aaron, 762. All right? Are you with me? 762 home runs is the all-time home run champion is Barry Bonds. Whether you want to acknowledge it or not, that is a fact. Barry Bonds walked 2,558 times in his career. That is an all-time record. It's not even close. Barry Bonds was intentionally walked 688 times in his career. Those three numbers I gave you, let me repeat them. 762 home runs, the most in Major League Baseball history. 2,558 times he was walked, most in Major League Baseball history. 688 times he was walked intentionally, most in Major League Baseball history. Now let me ask you this question, everyone that's listening out there. When you go to a baseball game, but when you went to watch Barry Bonds, or if you're going to watch any hitter, but if you were talking about these three categories, and I asked you, as a fan, which one of those records do you want to see broken? The home run record, the walk record, or the intentional walk record? Which one are you going to choose? I think we all know the answer to that.
Yeah.
And thus answers the question that goes back to a 3-0 pitch in 2021 that Mad Dog Russo is all caught up in a guy that played in 76. Would have taken
last
it.
Played in 76.
Last played in 76. It's easy. Why did people boo when Barry Bonds got walked? Even people that were cheering for the other team booed when Barry Bonds got walked. Because we were robbed of him having a chance to hit the ball out of the park. If Hank Aaron takes a 3-0 pitch in 1976 at 47 miles an hour from a backup catcher, and he refuses to swing at it, whether he has a take sign or not, we as fans were deprived of the opportunity for him to hit a home run when he could have easily hit one.
Crank it.
They're all still playing baseball, last I checked.
You think Barry Bonds cares about your feelings? You're wrong.
Right.
You pitch down the middle on a 47, it don't matter, because he's used to just seeing all these pitches that are wide. Because back then, you actually had to throw four pitches to intentionally walk a guy. Now you can just put four up and send them.
That's true.
Albert Pujols, 313 is the closest second place on the intentional walks. It's not, 688 to 313.
And he's about done with his career, and that's not even half of
it. Yeah, nobody's ever going to touch that. No. I mean, there's records that are that you say can never be broken, and then somebody might actually do it. This is nobody's touching 688 intentional walks.
No
whatever
way.
The
no way.
Regular walks.
And
are
I don't think they're
either.
Touching 2,558 yeah. regular walks either. And somebody would say they ain't going to hit 362 home runs either because they're not going to cheat like Barry. Once again, Major League Baseball, there is no asterisk next to it. So Mad Dog Russo's argument is so flawed in so many ways, and this is a national talk show guy in New York that honestly needs to hang it up.
Yeah.
He needs to hang it up like Hank Aaron hanging up in 1976.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, PGA Championship update. Gary Woodland, Kansas's own man from Topeka, doing pretty well. Yesterday shot 2 under. He's 3 off the pace going into round 2 today. Corey Connors. It seems like every golf tournament, there's a guy I've never heard of play golf that leads. Corey Connors.
Especially after the first round, right?
Yes. Like, yeah, Corey Connors, who most people haven't heard of, he is a 29-year-old Canadian. He ends up being in the lead 5 under, and then there's a half a dozen players led by Brooks Koepka who are 2 strokes back at 3 under, and then a 2 under is Gary Woodland. All right, real quickly, the Stanley Cup playoffs, in case you're interested in that, the Panthers beat the Lightning 6-5 in overtime, another OT game. Panthers, though, trailed the series against Tampa Bay 2-1. Penguins beat the Islanders 5-4. Penguins are up 2-1 in that best of 7. The Canadians lead 1-0. They beat the Maple Leafs last night 2-1. Golden Knights of Vegas go to Minnesota and win 5-2. The Vegas Knights now have a 2-1 lead in that series. Hockey tonight, Capitals Bruins at 5:30 on NBC Sports Network. Hurricanes versus Predators, game 3 of that one. Carolina up 2-0. That's on USA Network. Also on NBC Sports Network tonight is the Jets and the Oilers. Jets up 1-0. And on USA, it's the Avalanche versus the Blues. Avalanche up 2-0. I didn't even know USA still existed. The country. Not the country, the station.
not the country.
I do believe the country's still in existence.
It's rough sometimes, but we're still here.
Yeah, we're still here. That's right. That's right. The TV station USA, I did not even know it still existed. Did they come out with any new programming anymore on USA? I remember what was
they actually
it?
Do.
What was it? Silk Stockings or something was one I think they used to have.
Yeah.
Like 10:30 or something.
I've actually watched a couple of them recently, but it's more of like the thrillers and stuff like suspense
okay.
stuff.
Okay. Well, there's a point for this as well. If I don't really remember much of USA Network, and I didn't even know if it still was in existence. The fact that hockey playoff games are on NBC Sports Network and USA Network. If a tree falls in a forest and nobody's around
as
to
I
hear
said,
it, doesn't
when
make
hockey
a sound. How did you say that when hockey came
yeah,
back?
Like, yeah, from you remember
strike?
That cut we
yes.
had, that liner we have?
Yeah, oh yeah.
If a
yeah.
tree falls in a forest, does it really make a sound?
Yeah, does it?
And you're not around to hear it, does it really make a sound?
Oh yeah, I think I might have that. Let me see here. Let me see if I have this here. This would be fun. Let me see if I can pull it up. This is, oh man, this darn keyboard. Let me see if I can pull this up to close the show. Oh yes, this takes us back in time.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.
Here it is, Dusty, when the NHL came back after a strike.
Dusty Dinas.
The NHL, Dusty, is coming back. Are you excited?
No. If anybody follows me on Twitter yesterday, I used the the analogy that we like, you know, if a tree falls in the forest, nobody's around to hear it. Does it really make a sound?
I'm writing a note. Liner, Dusty. It still holds true today. NHL still has a cruddy TV deal, at least for this
about,
year.
What do you think about the NHL playoffs being on USA? No.
No. Oh, man. Have a great day, everyone. We'll end on that note. Dusty will have regional track and field updates once again starting at 3 o'clock today. Best of luck to all the track and field participants in qualifying for state next week.